Hi, it's Poppins, and this is Restless Viking Radio. This story starts on a narrow cobblestone street in Sardinia, following our guide toward a plain wooden door in a stucco wall. No sign, no menu, no clue what we were walking into. Just a knock and a room full of strangers. Here's what happened. We stroll down the cobblestone street with our Sardinian guide, Ivo. Sardinia is an Italian island west of Rome. Ivo explained, "I am bringing you to Tabrero's winery and art gallery." Art gallery? Winery? In my mind, I saw the Louvre in Paris, where we had just been, with its sharp lines and modern glass. Ivo walked up to the wooden door along the stucco wall. "Here we are," he announced. The door creaked open and my eyes had to adjust to the dimly lit room. The musty scent reminded me of our cabin up north. Soon, I was able to focus on my surroundings, clay brick walls and a dirt floor. Several men were speaking in Sardo, or was that Italian, and they were bustling in the distance at the back doorway. "I have made friends with these men," Ivo explained, "and now I can bring you, my guests, my honored guests." He gestured to Chuck and I and led us into a small room off to the side. Only men, I noticed. I didn't see any other women. This cozy space had barrels along the back wall and a line of barrels waist high stretching across the adjacent clay brick barrier. Ancient tools hung above and a dusty guitar rested on top as if it's waited a very long time to be played. The day's final rays of light crept through a yellowed, multi-paned window. In these long shadows, my eyes caught a wanted poster with six photos of kidnappers who were still on the loose. I wondered if they were seen as fugitives or as heroes. A small white sack hung from the rafters. I was curious, but translations took extra time and our host had prepared a special gathering just for us. My questions would have to wait. Ivo introduced us to Tabrero. "Buonasera." We shook hands. He motioned toward the small wooden table in the center of the small room. "Help yourselves," Ivo said. A basket of sliced bread sat on top of a hand-stitched cloth. "Grazie," I responded, sitting down, and I asked about the tablecloth. Ivo interpreted. Tabrero's grandmother had stitched the floral design using hand-dyed wool. "Bellissima," I gently touched a flower. I felt so honored that Tabrero had used his family heirloom for our visit. Tabrero, the owner, handed me a small, narrow glass of Vernaccia wine. "Ladies first, I guess." It was the size of a narrow shot glass. "Grazie," I nodded, holding the delicate, tiny cup between my thumb and forefinger. I raised the glass toward my host, made eye contact, nodding. "Salute." I tipped the small cup and gulped the whole thing. That's right. Down the gullet in one swallow. That very instant, Tabrero and Ivo's eyes grew in astonishment as they leaned forward, their jaws released into gaping glares. Ivo, the only other person who spoke English, cleared the shock from his throat. "Marta," Ivo said with a breathless gasp. You are supposed to sip the wine," Ivo explained. It, his hand, palm up, fingers pinched, searched the air for words. It is a delicacy. His eyebrows knotted in concern while his hand bounced in front of my face. This is only one of three or four wineries in our country that still produces Vernaccia. I felt the redness quickly spread across my cheeks. I closed my eyes and shook my head, speechless. I breathed in, ready to apologize and attempt to regain my composure. When I opened my eyes, I saw faces peering in the doorway with questioning glances. I lifted my hands and grasped them together in front of me, gesturing toward Tabrero. "How do I say sorry?" I asked Ivo over my shoulder. "Scusa," Ivo answered. I repeated, "Scusa." I widened my eyes with a rumpled forehead. "Scusa," I rambled in English. I thought it was a shot. I'm so embarrassed. I was trying to be cool, to fit in like a man," Ivo translated. The doorway clan and Tabrero lit with smiles and chuckles. Chabrero recovered quickly from his shock and poured another sample, always letting the first drop spill to the ground as an offering. "You see," Ivo explained, "when a daughter is born, the father begins to make a barrel of vernaccia for the girl's wedding." Ivo took a long breath, his hand poised in the air. "To make this wine, you need chestnuts and oxygen in the barrel, and a yeast forms." Ivo's hand danced as he spoke. It's delicate, and it needs the right amount of humidity and temperature to age properly. The vernaccia, it changes over time." Tabero gave us each a darker version of vernaccia. "This one has been aged 3 years. I sipped this rich oak-flavored wine. I buttered a piece of bread and nibbled on it, hoping to balance the effects of the alcohol. I didn't want to embarrass myself any further. Chabrero turned and appeared with a hunk of cured meat. He secured the leg of ham in a woodshop vise and sliced thin pieces. Prosciutto. Ivo clarified, "This is Chabrero's hobby. He doesn't sell this wine. He makes it to share with these men." Suddenly, Chabrero was on his feet again, and another sample was drawn from a new barrel. The first drop seeped into the dirt. This one was a deeper amber. "This has been aged 10 years, Ivo described. The flavor tap danced across my tongue. It tingled. By now, I was feeling light and wistful. Boy, I was glad we were eating a little protein and some bread." Chuck caught Tabrero's eye and pointed to the guitar. Chuck pantomimed strumming and gave Tabrero a shrug. Tabrero pursed his lips, nodded, and shrugged back. As Chuck was tuning the strings, the men in the doorway returned. Chuck played wagon wheel, toes were tapping and heads bobbing and smiles grew. Looking behind the doorway clan, I could see that the long tables down the center of the large room were dressed in butcher paper, and an array of bowls had lined the surface. When Chuck finished the song, Ivo gestured for us to go to the next room. "You are in for a treat," he grinned. A large water bottle filled with red wine was passed joyfully around the table as we each found a seat. A gentleman labeled a heaping mound of homemade pasta dressed in tomato sauce from a massive bowl. Ivo introduced us to the group. Marco, Tabrero's brother, raised his brow and threw an imaginary cast and mimed reeling in his line. "Fishing?" I gestured a cast in reply. Marco nodded. "Pesca." Then he held up his phone, showing us a massive fish hanging off of his hand. Chuck shared pictures of his Zodiac, an inflatable boat, and a map of the Great Lakes. We listed the different type of fish we caught, and Marco named his favorites from the Mediterranean Sea. The group grew wide-eyed as we shared Michigan's temperature range, which we had converted into Celsius with the help of Google. When we shared photos of our snow-covered rustic cabin with an outhouse, eyes enlarged and the room was filled with head-shaking no. Another man, also named Marco, explained his paintings that he had hung in the winery and at Ivo's hotel. Marco had completed these pieces using soil. Some were landscapes and others were more abstract. During our pantomimed conversations, I emptied my wine glass. When I turned back, it was full again. I still had some pasta in my bowl when Ivo cleared it. "It's okay," he said, and nodded to the back doorway. One man appeared at the back entrance with a bounce in his step and a broad smile. He held a large tray with greenery branches sticking out and a roasted suckling piglet nestled on top, a Sardinian delicacy. The crispy reddish-brown piglet on a bed of greens was presented to me first. Instantly, I thought of Wilbur from Charlotte's Web and I swallowed away my hesitation. I graciously smiled and pinched the back hoof, lifting it. The little leg separated from its body. My stomach quaked. I swallowed again. "It's ham," I reminded myself. "It's just ham. It's just ham." I was determined to be polite and not insult our host again. Accompanying this tradition was a bowl of chopped artichokes and little orange oval slices that smelled fishy. "That's botarga," Ivo explained. "Botarga is the salted ovaries of the mullet fish. The process of collecting, dissecting, and drying the mullet's ovaries is a painstaking procedure and another Sardinian specialty." I sat up taller, trying to make more room for more food. The men dug in, slurping and sucking on the bones, stacking them like Lincoln logs on the side of their plates. With the fear of being rude, I ate everything on my plate but refrained from sucking on Wilbur's leg. I swallowed down the fish ovaries with wine, and soon my glass was full again. As the alcohol filtered through my system, I heard one man say, "Mi amore una romis pica ole posso di daria di pescarle." I turned to Chuck. He said his wife is a rapscallion, a pain in the neck, and he can't go fishing. Chuck's eyes widened. "How do you know?" I shrugged. "Apparently the wine has helped." Then, as if on cue, the gentleman's phone rang. Getting up, the man answered. It was his wife. "He says he's with the guys," Evo stated, who suddenly turned to me and gave me a smirk. "Go," he nodded toward the phone in the man's hand. "Lean in and say hi." Evo's brown eyes sparkled as he shared his plan with the group. They all leaned toward the phone as I sashayed across the dirt floor. The man, wearing a menacing grin, held out his phone to me. "Hello, buongiorno," I sang into the mouthpiece. Laughter and astonishment filled the room like a flock of birds taking flight. Evo nodded and he spread his arms wide. "Now we are friends." The man, who was on the phone with his rapscallion of a wife, mimed snapping a photo. "Oh, he wants to show his wife that you are harmless," Evo translated. We flanked Evo, who stands just over 5 feet tall. We towered over him. The wife immediately texted back about our stature. "Sove pese?" one man asked. Evo's eyebrows jumped. "Do you lift weights?" Another chimed in. "Face sport?" Evo said, "Do you play sports?" Chuck nodded and Googled Bjornsson, an Icelandic man who has placed in the strongman competition since 2010. "This is my ninth cousin, winner of the strongman competition," Chuck explained. Several well-fed and wine-soaked men stood and pantomimed having muscles. In a flash, I was back in my second grade classroom, feeling the same affection for these cheerful boys pretending to have superhero strength. Tabrero emerged from the side room carrying the white sack that had been hanging from the rafters. "Oh, I was excited to find out about this curious item." "It is goat cheese," Evo smiled and explained. "They wait for the baby boy goat to fill its stomach with its mother's milk, and then they slaughter it. Right away, they remove the stomach and they add rennet and band both ends. The stomach is hung to age, and after several months, the milk turns into a fine cheese." Tabrero placed the goat's stomach on a cutting board. He whipped out his pocket knife with practiced elegance. Then he gently sliced across the surface. I turned to Chuck and whispered, "It reminds me of my C-section." The pungent cheese radiated an aroma that I couldn't place as ever smelling before. Chuck whispered, "Oh, don't give me any. I can't eat another bite." Our host spread some on a slice of bread and passed it to me. "Grazie," I smiled with respect and graciousness. All the while, doubts raced through my mind as the white, chunky cheese neared my mouth. Goat stomach cheese. Goat stomach cheese. I felt everyone's eyes on me. Again, I didn't want to offend them. I took a bite, and I realized it tasted good, like the orange bar cheese with an extra zing. I raised my brows. "It is so good. Bene, bene," I nodded. Tabrero handed Chuck a piece of bread dressed in the stout spread. "Grazie," Chuck chewed cordially. As Tabrero passed the stomach cheese to the other side of the table, an orchestra of flicking knives rustled the humidity. Another Sardinian tradition, carrying a pocket knife. Joyful bantering filled the room as the group lathered this special topping over their bread. I soaked in the camaraderie. Another platter with a spiral of dough like a tube was presented to me. Still insecure about my Venaccia debacle, I searched for a clue on how to handle this new offering. Evo noticed my hesitation. You break off a piece. Use your fingers," he instructed. It's a donut." The sugar-sprinkled treat was delicious. Fried bread dough rolled in brown sugar and cinnamon. Let me tell you, it was finger-looking good. Evo stood and said we needed to stay on schedule. Could we help clean up? I offered. No, you are on holiday. He gestured for us to follow him. We waved to our host. Grazie, we called as we stepped out onto the cobblestone street. The evening air carried a crisp freshness as the stars began to spatter across the Sardinian sky. I glanced back at the unmarked wooden door. I'd shown up awkward and I left with friends, who we could still faintly hear from beyond the stucco wall. It's strange. We didn't plan that night. We didn't book it. We didn't research it. Didn't even know that the door existed. We just followed someone we trusted and walked in. And somehow that turned into bread and music and stories and a table full of friends. Not because we did anything right, not because we understood the language. We just showed up. I'm starting to think that that's how most good things happen. Not from perfect planning, but from walking through the door when it opens. So if you ever get the chance, take the invitation. Sit down. Stay a while. Those are the nights you remember. And if this story reminds you of someone that you would share a table with, send it to them.